Welcome to the Omfer podcast.
Hello and welcome to the OMFIF DMI podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends, new developments and innovation, as well as the policy, technology and regulatory challenges of digital finance. Now, I'm John Orchard, OMFIF CEO, and today I'm talking to Dr. Wolfram Seidemann, Chief Executive Officer of GND Currency Technology. And thank you, Wolfram, for joining me today. This time we'll discuss if we need programmable central bank digital currency. The growing interest in CBDC and the possible use of smart contracts has led central banks to consider programmability as a feature with many potential benefits. It would allow for innovative ways for payments to be made by specifying automated behaviours of that digital money. But there remains a lack of understanding around programmability in relation to CBDC, so we need also to consider the potential risks. We'll also discuss interoperability, resilience, universal acceptance, and the ability to make offline payments where there's limited internet connectivity. And finally, we'll cover use cases and how programmable money fits within central banks' monetary policy objectives, the role of distributed ledger technology, and how to incentivize widespread adoption. So welcome, Wolfram. Nice to see you again and to talk to you on this very important topic. The discussion about CBDC is changing. I'd say it's not about the if, but about the how. Are you surprised by this change?
Thank you, John. In fact, I'm not surprised at all. It's such a strong concept, and I've always been a big supporter of central bank digital currency. However, if I recall the discussions back in 2019, the vision was vaguer, fuzzier, almost unclear if there was a need for a digital currency at all or any new form of money. When we spoke to central banks back then, many of the discussions were about who would actually have the mandate for digital payments and digital currencies. For us, it was clearly the responsibility of the central banks. They have been upholding public trust in currency for centuries. And the OMFIF study that we did together, Digital Currency, A Question of Trust, published last year, showed that the public continues to see central banks in that role.
Yeah, the study provided interesting insights. I refer to it in practically every DMI meeting that we hold. And a key point was that central banks are preferred digital money issuers.
Yes, central banks are the guardians of currency. We talked a lot about the relevance of cash as a public good. Nowadays, it doesn't just mean physical cash, but also cash in digital format. Currencies should be guided by public, not private interests. And central bank understands that it's their main responsibility to enable digital payments for everyone with a central bank digital currency. They are finally aware that digital money cannot be left to the private sector. And I'm not surprised that so many central banks are working on CBDC projects now. They have many motivations. Digital financial inclusion and overall growth of the digital economy are the mains of them. This, in turn, will give way to innovation and opportunities for new business models while still safeguarding monetary sovereignty.
But it seems to be moving very quickly now.
Actually, we at GND have been heavily involved with the concept of CBDCs for several years now. And same is true for some central banks, which were true pioneers from early on and extremely open-minded. However, two crucial moments accelerated this process. As the economy moved towards digital payments, big techs quickly saw an opportunity to create their own digital money. They knew they could leverage their enormous user base. They recognized how their existing network could potentially dominate the payment sphere, and this rise would have been profound impacts on the financial system. This was a wake-up call for many central banks.
And of course, the second accelerator was undoubtedly the COVID-19 pandemic.
Indeed, the COVID-19 pandemic caused many changes. It sparked an age of digital transformation. It's driving CBDC development into top gear as the global economy goes through a digital revolution. The need for a universal means of digital payment has become very clear, and the pressure is increasing. You can describe what happens as a ketchup bottle effect. At first, not much happens, and then it's like an innovation tsunami.
Yeah, advances in technology have driven changes in the payment landscape and their systems worldwide in the last couple of years. and there have been changing interpretations regarding the role the CBDC can play in that landscape. Would you say that the requirements for CBDC are now clear today?
Well, CBDC is the public form of digital cash. It's important to transfer the value and principles of cash into the digital world. A currency is more than just a means of payment. There have been intense discussions, but also more agreement into the key requirements for a CBDC. These include a secure infrastructure, governance, how to balance privacy with transparency, how to mitigate adverse economic impacts. It's crucial to avoid a disintermediation of the financial system. For most central banks, CBDCs are intended to complement cash. And as with cash, consumer relationships should remain with financial providers, not with the central banks.
Yeah, the success of CBDC will depend, of course, on consumer behavior and whether indeed the consumer accepts CBDC. And that's currently still the big unknown.
There are some core features that need to be in place to ensure that consumers adopt this new digital form of public money. That's cash-like convenience, low cost, ease of use, even without the latest devices or even without internet connection. And of course, privacy remains a main concern. Our guideline has always been keep it as close to cash as possible. That's how to gain trust and acceptance. The discussions are fast moving from design questions to how CBDC will be used. Besides requirements by the public, we should also consider requirements from the industry. And this is where programmability comes into play.
And indeed, that's the focus of today's discussion. And a lot of people see programmability as a key differentiator. Why is that?
Well, a currency needs to be universal and general purpose. It therefore needs to meet all possible use cases. It must be functional in existing and in future infrastructure. So digital currencies need to have the ability to be used in various scenarios, from offline peer-to-peer payments to automated machine-to-machine payments. Take a look at the motivations behind the different stakeholders. Central banks want to ensure the stability of the financial system. Governments want the ability to provide aid to the public in a more efficient and secure manner. The distribution of helicopter money in the times of crisis would be such an example. Financial service providers want to remain in the game and offer new and innovative services. Businesses want to run more efficiently and enable IoT payments. And consumers need to see the benefits of a CBDC, see that it's convenient and can improve their payment experience with lower costs. With programmable features, you can improve the user experience for people and businesses, and not only for today's requirements. If properly designed from the beginning, it also is ready for future innovations. It's no less a door opener to new markets, giving way to entirely new business models.
So would you agree, Wolfram, that we need a programmable CBDC?
Yes. And no, this goes back to its design, and I will come back to some definition as well. CBDC needs to conform with digital programmable payment processes now and evolve with new markets in the future. I have to make the cash comparison again. See cash as a platform. Anyone has access. It's always the same, no matter how it's used. Its usage is detached from the business case. The same principle should apply for CBDC. CBDC needs to be a platform for innovation. It should not be programmed for specific uses. The role of the central bank is to provide stability, but it shouldn't be responsible for every conceivable business case. That's why we need a CBDC with programmable features.
Can you elaborate on this?
A lot of people talk about programmable CBDC, but what they're asking for is actually the use of it in smart contracts. It's critical to differentiate between programmable money and programmable payments. The two terms are often used interchangeable, but there is a very big difference. We don't want money with a programmed logic. We don't want a currency that can only be spent on groceries, for example, or must be spent until November. Imagine the impact on usability if you get a banknote that can expire or only be spent on groceries. What would the process then be for the merchant to obtain real money? A legal tender should be unrestricted for general purpose. That said, The best technical solution would be to have one common platform provided by the central bank upon which private players can build innovative services. Wouldn't this be better than a fragmented patchwork of individual solutions optimized for different use cases? That would carry too much risk. Digitization often fails at its interfaces, something we really want to avoid.
So what you're saying is it's about functions and not about restrictions.
Indeed. What we are seeking is functionality and innovative ways to transfer money or make payments. It's not necessary to affect the property of the currency itself. CBDC is the digital equivalent to cash. People trust in cash. This reputation must remain when cash becomes digital. Therefore, it must be universal and general purpose for people to accept and promote using it.
Programmable payments could offer the necessary functionalities, you think. What is the potential in programmable payments?
Yes, it's a key feature of a CBDC that it can be used in digital business models. Programmable payments refer to transfer of money for which predetermined conditions apply. Such conditions are valid for specific cases like daily spending limits or automated payments. And these conditions are set on wallets that hold CBDC and not set on the currency itself. Imagine the potential opportunities this could bring. It can enable new processes, new products and services. Think of driverless vehicles interacting directly with charging points, frictionless payments at the precise moment goods were received. Efficiencies brought on by machine-to-machine payments open entirely new business models.
So what does that all mean for the technical approach to the implementation of CBDC?
Currently, the technical possibilities are wide, and it could be tempting to over-engineer a CBDC. But we should think simple. Central banks should focus on their core functions and responsibilities. We believe that the programmability logic doesn't have to reside on the core layer, but rather with the financial service providers, such as commercial banks. This would also improve the overall performance and reduce complexity of a CBDC ecosystem. You have the core system, a platform provided by the central bank on which all other functions are built on. Just one basic currency infrastructure that could be the driver for digital innovation and the digital economy. And payments can be triggered in smart wallets.
Tell us about those. Could you go into a bit more detail about smart wallets, Volkram?
Yes, the smart wallet is a term coined by our team. It's a hosted wallet or holder of CBDC with additional features. It can, for instance, generate automated payments based on conditions programmed or set up by the owner. So the currency within the wallet remains universal. It's simply that the wallet itself can have set conditions.
Can all use cases be covered with programmable payments in these smart wallets? What examples do you have in mind?
Yes, many use cases can be covered that way. Again, going back to machine-to-machine payments, an example would be something like smart metering, where charging electric cars. Money might even be stored in the car itself so that payments can work offline. Industrial machines could reorder supplies when stock runs low, diagnose reliability issues, or pay for repair autonomously. Letter of credit processes would be more efficient. Payments are triggered upon receipt. Or governments can issue wallets with relief money in times of crisis. This money can only be spent under certain circumstances. This could happen through government agencies issuing wallets that could come with conditions and which are bound to predefined policies. However, when it's spent, it's universal money again. Another use case could be a multi-owner wallet. For example, a wallet that has two owners and they both need to agree on specific spending. All these examples can boost payment convenience and efficiency. Imagine a piggy bank set up for a vacation fund. Every euro that goes into that can only be used for a vacation as agreed upon by the friends that want to join that vacation. But once it's out, it can be spent universally and it's not restricted. As such, the piggy bank has a purpose like a small wallet.
You said that programmability should lie with financial service providers and not with central banks.
Yes, financial service providers are the best players to develop new and innovative use cases and services. They have a better understanding of their consumers and customers, whether B2B or B2C. In any case, a CBDC design would be flexible enough to allow for financial service providers to provide additional value to their customers. The central bank should provide the fundamental infrastructure. And as a technology partner, we can offer software development kits for integration and support. This enables financial service providers and other businesses to develop their own use cases. The smart wallet concept provides different roles. The central bank can establish global roles that cannot be changed. Companies or governments can set wallet conditions, and the user can define personal rules, such as a parent defining a weekly spending limit for their child.
Yeah, they may or may not like that, of course, but we already mentioned that user acceptance is key. Could programmability also work as a tool to incentivize CBDC adoption?
Well, low friction is the key to success. CBDC should be universally accepted, reliable, and cover all consumer use cases. The user experience needs to be simple and convenient. If you face barriers trying something new, you will never use it again. Programmable features, as seen in banking wallets, would add convenience. However, imposing restrictions like expiry dates for CBDC holdings would not strengthen the trust amongst the general public. Ultimately, the broader and simpler possible uses in B2B scenarios are, the more likely CBDC will foster new ideas and open new markets and be used by people. Programmable features increase the reach of the currency into new markets. So instead of using a social media token to book or pay for a service, which can be unstable, we can reduce the overall risk of the economy.
So you see lots of benefits for people and businesses. But what about monetary policy? Could central banks also use programmability to achieve a monetary policy objective?
Well, the central bank or government also has a business case where CBDC using programmability can be used. It could support certain measures to achieve a monetary policy objective. It's up to the central bank to decide. The use of helicopter money as a monetary response or policy response to COVID-19 is a good example. As the pandemic halted global economic growth, governments could have issued relief money more efficiently to lessen risk for a recession. From a technical perspective, you could also think of limits on CBDC holdings. If the limit is higher, then CBDC is more suitable as a store of value. But too small, a limit restricts the user freedom and when making payments. For now, we should focus on understanding the economic liquidity and financial stability implications of introducing a CBDC. That's why we are partnering with a deep technology analytics firm, FNA, for the rollout of a CBDC simulation solution. Such simulators will provide further insights into the impact of digital currency on financial ecosystems.
We know some central banks are considering interest there in CBDC. What about that, Volkram?
Well, that's a difficult topic. An interest-bearing CBDC could enhance the economy's response to changes in the central bank interest rate. Negative interest might incentivize its use as means of payment, but are a risk for acceptance. The central bank should treat cash and CBDC the same. Cash is not interest-bearing, and so I don't see it for CBDCs as well.
GMD has really chosen a different approach then when it comes to CBDC and programmability.
For me, our solution, Thelia, follows a true pioneering approach, an innovative programmability solution that lays a foundation for new ideas. At the same time, people can be sure that CBDCs are just a digital form of cash without any usability restrictions or privacy issues. That forces the continued trust in the value of money as well as in the digital economy. Central banks are designing the currency for the future. This currency must work in all use cases today and tomorrow. With such a platform concept, we can boost the digital economy and fully support financial inclusion.
Well, thanks very much, Volkram, for this very interesting and I think important discussion. We've looked at what's needed to introduce a CBDC and the role programmability might play, and nor is that simple, although it may seem so on the surface. And we've looked at how central banks' policy may impact the success or failure of this kind of digital cash. And ultimately, it's up to an informed public to decide what form of future digital money should take, and a variety of options should be presented to them, I think. So do get in touch with GMD directly if you'd like to hear more. So thank you very much for listening to us today. And Volkram, thanks for your interesting contribution.
Thank you for listening to the OMFIF podcast.